On the line, I've got Andy Findle, who was one of the original people involved with the station. Good morning, Andy.
Morning, Aaron.
So, how early did you get involved with the station?
Well, it was right from the beginning, right from before broadcasting started. We've started having meetings at the Raglan Area School with, I think it was Bo Rewity. He was the principal at the time at Raglan yep. Area School, and somehow word went round if anyone was interested in starting a radio station to meet up at the school.
Okay, and you actually had, you worked in radio, or still kind of work in radio, don't you?
I originally worked for Radio New Zealand in Wellington for about 10 years in my 20s.
Okay. And were you ever on the air with Raglan Community Radio? Because you did all the technical stuff.
Not much.
Not much.
We did do is at one stage there was a kids program on Sunday mornings.
Yeah.
And I used to take my three girls along, and the flatmates' son as well, and every other weekend, every other Sunday morning for a few weeks anyway, a few months.
Yeah.
And we put on the kids' radio show with stories and songs and so on. So I tried not to talk. I tried to get the kids to do all the talking, which they did pretty well. So yeah. I can't really say I've done any talking.
Okay, this could be the most you've ever done.
You might have heard me in the background saying, "Come on, it's time to talk now."
Okay, yeah, that sort of thing. So you'd worked for Radio New Zealand. That must have been quite a contrast to Raglan Community Radio.
It helped me a lot in the sense that what I used to do was. I was what they call a studio operator, and for the first half of my time there, I used to sit beside the announcer and play the records in those days, and this was on national radio.
Yep.
Mostly playing the trailers and play the programs while the announcer just talked.
Okay.
So I learned how to complete the operator. A radio station, aside from the talking, and then in the second half of my time there, I worked in the drama studio, making radio plays and kids programs.
Right.
And so I learned all about radio production and recording.
Okay, so and you made quite a few of the ads, or probably maybe all of the ads. I don't know at the start.
When the radio station started going in the, about 94?
Yeah, 94.
That was when computers also started to take off. And I found that I was very happy to find that I could use a little program that I could download for free to edit sounds. Yeah, so I was able to carry on the thing I enjoyed doing, which is radio production.
Okay, and you made. Now I wanted to ask. I think you should be able to hear this. I'm just going to play one, and yeah. If you can hear it. Well, that'll do. Anyway, did you make that one?
Yes, I did. Yes.
And how long has that one been playing at the station?
That would have been around about 96. I think I would have made that.
Okay. Do you remember who the singer was? Some people know, but I can never remember.
Is it Miriam Makeba?
Yeah, that sounds right.
South African singer. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm kind of running all that kind of stuff now myself, but I feel nostalgic about the older ones, so I kind of leave them playing.
Yeah.
I think there was also. I want to ask you about this one. Yeah, so that one.
That was Des Baker.
He made that one?
Yeah.
Okay.
that was also made, probably a few months later. I think.
Okay, right.
Around about the same time.
Yeah, it's another one I feel a little bit nostalgic about. I can't bring myself to take it off. We have got lots of new ones as well, but you know.
Right, yeah. Oh, that's good.
So from the technical side of things, what, how was the station equipped when it started, like when it first went to air? And
yeah, it just had a very simple little mixer, about a six-channel mixer, I think. Turntable, I would think, yeah, it must have been a turntable, tape deck, and not much else, actually.
A couple of microphones, hopefully.
A couple of microphones, and I think we got a box anyway soon after to be able to put the telephone on the air.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I remember that thing.
But, yeah.
It was falling apart a bit by the time. Well, it wasn't falling apart, but the cable coming out of it was. I used to do long interviews back about for an hour, and I'd be having to hold the cable the entire time.
Yeah.
So, yes, yeah, I remember.
Yeah, well, hopefully things work a little bit better now than they did.
Oh, yeah, things are very different. And so the station couldn't, when it started, I read that it couldn't even go on the air all day.
No, because somebody had to be there to play the music.
Right.
Originally there was no computer, and the way we used to play ads was using very short cassettes. So a cassette would have had about a minute of tape in it.
Yeah.
And we used to record the cassette, record the ad twice. And all the announcer had to do was let the cassette play to the end, and then it was queued up ready to play the next time.
So now it's automatic. Nobody has to do anything except press a button, and it tells you when to press it.
Yeah, right. what we did then was I found an old computer. And a program that would let me put buttons on the screen that would play ads. So the first system was after the cassette player was a screen with buttons on it, and each ad corresponded to a button, and there was a bit of coding involved in hooking up the music or the sound file to the button. But that was a huge improvement, but still, somebody had to be there to drive it.
So that was the first version of the radio machine that you made.
That's right. Yes.
Could you play music with it at that point?
No, you couldn't play music with it. It was just ads. So we had CD players, of course. That's right.
CDs. Yeah.
So we used to play. I probably had a couple of CD players. So yeah, that CD players were the main source of the music in those days.
Okay, when I arrived at the station, you developed that program to the point where people could play songs and there were MP3 files available to play?
Yeah, I think in about 2000 I talked the station into buying a computer and took on the job of writing a program to play music, MP3 files and ads, and I used a program or an application called Visual Basic to whip up a simple interface. But one of the great things about it is that once one song had finished, it could trigger the start of the next song. So that meant that the station could be automated and run when nobody was there.
Although I do believe there was a method of doing that before you made the program, which was a 10-disc CD changer.
Oh, that's right. Yes, I remember that. Now, when you finished your shift, you put on the CD changer, but it all it would do is play random tracks from 10 CDs, which were the favourite CDs, of course, of the announcer that had just left.
Yes,
which used to get pretty tiring to listen to. The same songs would come up time after time. And there was no ads or trailers or anything.
Anything at all.
Yeah.
And something else I also read that you might be able to confirm, when it first started, like there was, I think, got a temporary license, and the station promised not to broadcast even over more than half the town. Am I pushing the memory a bit far here?
I don't recall that exactly, but okay. What did happen was 2002 or 3 or somewhere around there,
yeah.
We decided to, what was it, even 2005 might have been.
You're talking about the change of frequency.
Decided to try and get a more powerful transmitter and locate it where it is now up on the hill, because before that it was just on the roof of
the town hall here.
In fact, it was, yeah, on the roof of the town hall, that's right, which wasn't the best spot for a transmitter.
Sort of a bit of a valley, really.
Yeah, so we decided to relocate it up on the hill, and to do that we had to have a change of frequency. But we changed the frequency before we shifted the transmitter, and I got a phone call from a technician from Classic Hits, who was quite upset, or their station manager was quite upset because one of their listeners could no longer receive Classic Hits; they could only get the Raglan Community Radio.
Because so you were still broadcasting from the old spot.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so the station manager of Classic Hits was quite upset about this because it might have impacted on one of their surveys, which impacts on their income.
Right.
And so the technician was very concerned that we hurry up and move the transmitter.
But how long did that actually take? Because it's all done by volunteers.
That's right. Well, it was a few weeks later that we actually did manage to get the mast up on the pole. Might be a bit better description. The pole up on the hill.
Yeah.
And start broadcasting. So, but in the meantime, we were really upsetting Classic Hits.
Were you broadcasting with the new transmitter from down here? Like that was a bit more powerful.
Probably were, but we. We still kept the power down to what it was supposed to be originally.
Okay. Well, it makes me wonder, because every now and again, like, we still have the odd issue with that transmitter up there, and then I'm forced to put the backup transmitter on, but I haven't had any complaints about that, so hopefully it's all right.
Oh, well, that's good. Oh, I'm pleased to hear there is a backup transmitter.
Well, it's just the old one. It still sits here in the studio and winds away when you turn it on like it always did.
Oh, right. I remember. Yes.
Yeah. So do you remember, were there any particular shows or events on the air way back in the 90s that you remember? I'm trying to, because I don't know the period of the station before 2000 at all.
So there was a handful of volunteer announcers who regularly did their shows. Chris Banks was one.
Yep.
What
sort of music did he play? Am I asking another difficult question? I should ask him.
Really? Well, it was contemporary music at the time.
Yep.
Yeah, it was, and it was perhaps more harder edged than what you might have heard on the.
Yeah.
Some of the songs were a bit harder edged than you would have heard on the usual regular commercial radio, but.
Well, how did you like it being involved with a community station? It must have been completely different to national radio. Did you enjoy that?
Yes, I did. Actually, before I left national radio or Radio New Zealand, they started to do a producer started what was called Access Radio in Wellington.
Oh, yeah.
And so that was involved community groups coming in and running a half hour or an hour show, much like the Hamilton Community Radio.
Yeah.
So I had a little bit of experience with that and working with volunteers.
Yeah.
So I was quite comfortable with working and personally I was quite excited about the idea of being involved in a radio station again. So it was great for me. I really enjoyed it, and being part of a group in the community, in the Raglan community, that was doing something really positive for the community. There was a guy from BCNZ, or the engineering arm of Radio New Zealand, called Vern Talbot.
Yes, yeah.
Well, he was originally from there, and he gave us a lot of help.
He still does, Andy. He still does.
Setting up, and he's still involved. Oh, that's good to hear.
Yeah, he's indispensable to me, in actual fact.
Is he? Oh, good. So you have a good close working relationship.
Yeah. No, Vern's one of those people who's never been obliged to help out the station, but has actually been hugely supportive over the years. He doesn't even live on this side of the divvy.
No, does he used to live at Whatawhata?
Yeah, he's still there. Yeah,
still at Whatawhata. Oh, that's good to hear. Yeah,
it's handy for dropping off broken bits of equipment.
Right.